Showtime Sports presents Showtime Boxing with Eric Raskin and Kieran Mulvaney.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Showtime Boxing with Raskin and Mulvaney. With my co-host, Eric Raskin, I am Kieran Mulvaney. Eric, this is in fact not just another episode. It is our 100th.
Woo!
So congratulations to us. Add it together with our HBO podcast. I believe that's 380 or so episodes of podcasting we've cranked out together over the past 6.5 years or so. You know, with just a little bit more practice, we may just start getting the hang of it.
Yeah, my goal all along has been to qualify as competent by episode 1,000. And I think we're right on pace, I would say. In all seriousness, the first 100 at Showtime have been a pleasure. Thanks to Brian Daly and the whole team for their support. Thanks to Showtime for continuing to televise boxing, unlike some people we've podcasted for in the past. So anyway, Showtime Boxing Podcast hits 100 episodes. Well done, us.
Indeed. And of course, it is relatively easy to run up the episode count when we churn them out the way we're doing this week. This is the third podcast of the week as we continue our look at this Saturday's pay-per-view extravaganza featuring two separate but connected cards, each headlined by one of the Charlo twins. Shortly, we will be joined by our Showtime colleague, Raul Marquez. But before we dive into analyzing the fights that are on tap in the second part of this pay-per-view, Eric, it's probably worth taking a little bit of a time to sort of take that view from 30,000 feet, if you will. In that we've touched on this before, you know, when we were talking with Steven Espinoza when he first announced it, and with Al Bernstein a couple of weeks ago. But there's something to be said about the fact that this is a really unique situation. It is the first time, certainly that I could think of, that we have effectively two cards for the price of one, as it were, on Saturday night.
Yeah. Look, the whole pay-per-view thing is very tricky in the time of COVID. You know, Steven actually mentioned this, I believe, on that same podcast when we had him on. Or I guess it was the previous time we had him on just as the pandemic was beginning. He was talking about how you expect some boxing fans are struggling financially, and it's not a good time to ask them to spend pay-per-view dollars. And those pay-per-view parties that you used to be able to have, you know, a dozen friends come over, everybody chips in $5. That's a health hazard in 2020. So right. There's a real challenge here to offering a pay-per-view. You have to think about your audience and maybe think about ways to give them value that are different from the usual. The typical pay-per-view, you know, let's look at the last pay-per-view before the COVID shutdown began, February 22nd. This was fairly typical of how pay-per-view usually works. You had a huge main event, Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder 2, big names, established stars, heavyweights, just a classic pay-per-view headliner. And then the undercard was Prince Charles Martin versus Gerald Washington. Sebastian,
I tried to forget about that.
Well, I'm here to remind you. Sebastian Fundora versus Daniel Lewis and Emmanuel Navarrete versus Jao Santissima. So basically one fighter you really wanted to see, but he's in a mismatch, a showbox type fight with Fundora and a heavyweight fight nobody on the planet has any interest in. That, unfortunately, is what most pay-per-view cards look like. Not all, but most. The main event sells it. The promoter fills out the rest of the card with leftovers and fighters who won't eat into his budget much. Contrast that with this Saturday. You don't have a superstar or a heavyweight champion headlining. So what Espinoza and his team did was go the two-for-one route. And Raul Marquez hit on this yesterday, how the Charlos have this unique hook of being able to package them together. That's what distinguishes them. You're not trying to build a pay-per-view around Jermall Charlo yet. You're not trying to build a pay-per-view around Jermell Charlo yet. You're building it around the twins together, and they're both in legitimately dangerous fights against fellow top five fighters in their divisions. And then you fill out the card with four undercard fights, all featuring world-class fighters between 118 and 122 pounds. So it's six fights instead of the usual four. It's two main events instead of the usual one. The semantics bother me a little there since they both can't be main. But right. If you view it as two separate cards, I guess they can. And in the end, instead of a card where you say, well, the main event had better be great because nothing else on this card holds much promise, here it's closer to a guarantee of entertainment. You figure it's almost certain that two or three out of six fights will be really good. Maybe we'll get lucky and it's four or five excellent fights out of six, but either way, it's a lot of quality at bats instead of getting one chance at the plate and needing a home run. It's a very different and very smart approach to pay-per-view that might not attract the casual fan, but is almost everything a hardcore fan could ask for. And I'm sure I will be accused of kissing the boss's ass here, but whatever the outcome of the fights, I really admire the ingenuity and the value that Steven is aiming to provide on Saturday.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, let's take some time now. I'll take a deep breath and stop kissing butt and sounding like a shill. Although those are my honest opinions, it just happened to overlap with what a shill might say. Let's take some time to drill down now on the second main event of the card and the de facto main event of the entire broadcast: Jermell Charlo versus Jason Rosario. This is a unification of junior middleweight belts, but of greater significance is the fact that the winner will really stand alone as the true champion in a 154-pound division that is stocked with high-quality fighters. The Ring magazine has these two ranked number one and number two. The vacant championship goes to the winner. And let's just imagine for a moment that that winner is Charlo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We talked the other day about how, although an Erickson-Lubin rematch looks to be mandated by an alphabet group to happen next, some of the enthusiasm for that will have been diminished by the lackluster nature of Lubin's win over Terrell Gachet. So where would victory leave Charlo? Would he fully separate himself from a crowded field? Would he now be at a different level where he could ignore mandatories or rematches against people he's already beaten, like Lubin or Tony Harrison, and start looking at, say, somebody like an Errol Spence? In other words, does he become one of boxing's true stars with the accompanying star power with a win?
So whether he'd actually end up ever fighting Errol Spence is a conversation for a different time, and probably not something either man would necessarily jump at, given that they're buddies and they both train in Dallas with Derek James. But
right,
we've seen that kind of thing happen before. You know, friends say, ah, screw it, there's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Let's make some money together. It's not unheard of. But, you know, hey, we've had Derek on the podcast before. And of course, if we have him on again, and I know we'd love to, that's definitely a question to pose to him.
Yeah.
If Jermell wins this fight. But that wasn't really the question. It wasn't about Spence specifically. So first of all, would a win here elevate him above the rest of the division? And I think it's just worth underlining here something that we've talked about before. The way in which it seems almost anyone in the 154-pound division can, on a given day, beat just about everyone else. And there's this great like little sequence here that I just think is really worth sort of highlighting, that, you know, that shows it all, right? So you have Jarrett Hurd beat Tony Harrison. Julian Williams beat Jarrett Hurd. Jason Rosario beat Julian Williams. Nathaniel Gallimore beat Jason Rosario. Erickson Lubin beat Nathaniel Gallimore. Jermell Charlo beat Erickson Lubin. And right back to the beginning, Tony Harrison beat Jermell Charlo. But all of that said, you know, I do think that a clear Charlo win separates him from the pack, partly because he's avenged that one loss. And I think, you know, also if he does win on Saturday, he will, in addition to Harrison, who remains a very significant player in the division, have dispensed with two very talented rivals in both Lubin and Rosario. For what it is worth, he will also have most of the belts in that division. And so, yeah, he will. I think he will stand at the top. He will be seen as the man. And as we discussed on Monday, and as you just mentioned, Lubin doesn't feel as if he's done enough since that first round stoppage to earn a rematch or be considered a real threat if they do meet again. But, you know, let's say for argument's sake that he does rematch him just to get rid of that obligation, and he does beat him again, then I think he really is in the position where, you know, unless he decides that he feels he has to take mandatories to keep his belts, he can just sit back a little and force the others to eliminate each other. You know, as we've seen, they fight each other, they have fought each other, they can all beat each other. He can sit back and let them have their little Hunger Games and find, you know, who is the appropriate challenger for him. So I do think that puts him in the catbird seat there. Does it make him a star? That's a relative term, but to get back to the point that you just brought up, that Raul talked about yesterday, you do see what I was talking about how his star wattage is enhanced by being one half of a dominant twin tag team, don't you? Yeah. It's Jamal wins also, you know? So if Jamal stands atop 160 after Saturday night and Jamel 154, they're in a quite unique position, you know, unique almost in history, really, where they can, they've each got a division and they can dare all comers to come to Houston, you know, and try to knock them off. And I do think that given that they are charismatic, intelligent men with really pleasing fighting styles, they do have what it takes to make quite a name for themselves. Look, they're 30 now. It's not like they have all the time in the world, but they do potentially, if they get through this, put themselves in a position where they have that window to get some fame, to get some money. And I think also, particularly in the case of Jamel, you know, with who he's fought already, it's when they can start thinking about, okay, now maybe we've got a few years to make sure that we put together a career that winds up in Canastota.
Yeah.
So I do think one doesn't want to put too much on one fight, but it does feel as if Saturday night for both men is an opportunity for them to sort of take that big next step.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Absolutely.
But as we discussed yesterday, there's a massive caveat with Jamal, and he has to get past Sergey Derevyanchenko, and Jamel has to get past Jason Rosario. It would upset the narrative that we've just talked about, but it wouldn't necessarily be a huge upset per se if the Charlos ended up going 0-2. So what of Rosario? You know, with everything that we've just talked about in terms of, you know, Charlo, where he would be in the division, you know, stardom and so forth, can the same be said for Jason Rosario in terms of stardom if he wins, particularly coming off the back of that win over J-Rock Williams? Our buddy Stephen Bredman Edwards, who at the time was training J-Rock, has said, quote, "Rosario is a good fighter, but I'm not so sure he's as good as Julian made him look." Is that just slightly sour grapes, given that, as he explained to us the other week, Bredman is no longer training J-Rock? Or do you think that's an accurate assessment?
Well, to answer quickly the first question of whether Rosario makes that leap to star, who gets to call all the shots and possibly make mega fights if he wins, the answer is probably no. If he wins, he's the champ, but he hasn't fully separated himself. I think a rematch with Jermell is almost certainly what would come next if he wins. As for assessing Rosario, I think Bredman is right. I think he was being honest. Rosario is good, but probably not as good as he looked against J-Rock. He can punch. He has real power. And he landed big shots on J-Rock and took him out. But Jermell Charlo did the same. These are the two guys who beat Williams, and they both stopped him in the fifth round. So maybe J-Rock just doesn't have the greatest chin. That said, Rosario has been on a heck of a run since his one loss to Nathaniel Gallimore, as you mentioned. That was in 2017. In the last 3.5 years, he's 8-0-1. He beat J-Rock, of course. He beat Justin Deloach, who was 17-2, Jamonte Clark, who was 13-0, Juan Carlos Rodriguez, who was 16-1, Mark Hernandez, who was 13-1-1, and Jorge Cota, who was 28-2. That's a lot of good wins over good fighters. That's also a lot of good wins over fighters who are most definitely not on Jermell Charlo's level. So that's the big question here. Rosario is good. He can punch. He's fast. He's well-schooled. But is he going to be outgunned against Charlo? That's what we're tuning in to see. I think you could look at this fight and say everything Jason Rosario can do, Jermell Charlo can do better. But you can also look at it and say, hey, Charlo got upset by Tony Harrison. He's vulnerable. And Rosario is a guy who can catch you. I think, like, there's no question who the favorite is, but I also think Rosario is the definition of a dangerous underdog, as he proved against J-Rock when some sportsbooks apparently had him at 30-1. You're not getting numbers like that here. He's plus 270 at DraftKings Sportsbook, which makes him 2.7-1. And that sounds to me like a clear underdog, but a very live underdog. All right, let's move on to the co-main, which sees the return of Daniel Roman, who brings a record of 27-3-1 into his matchup with Juan Carlos Payano. Until losing last time out to Muradjan Akhmadaliev, Roman was on a 26-fight unbeaten streak, including against some really strong opposition. His last eight opponents had a combined record of 134-2-3. And he didn't fall that far short against Akhmadaliev. Really right. Close fight. He is one of the more underrated fighters around right now. Kieran, should a good win over Payano, if he can get it, earn him a rematch with Akhmadaliev?
Yeah, you know, Roman is really a terrific fighter. He's been in back-to-back Fight of the Year contenders, you know, against Akhmadaliev, which, as you said, he only just lost, and TJ Doheny, which he won. You mentioned that the cumulative total of his last eight opponents, as you just did with Rosario, it's worth briefly breaking down the records. Akhmadaliev, his only loss in that sequence was 8-0. Doheny was 21-0. Gavin McDonald was 20 wins, 1 loss, 2 draws. Moises Flores, 25-0. Ryo Matsumoto, 21-1. Shun Kubo, 12-0. Adam Lopez, 16-0-1. Marlon Olea, 12-0. I mean, that's strong. And it's also worth noting that he fought Matsumoto and Kubo in their hometown in Tokyo. It's odd that, to me, it feels like he has been a wee bit under the radar until lately. I'm certainly a bit culpable of that myself. I don't know that I really sat up and paid attention to him until the Doheny fight. It was the Akhmadaliev fight, even though he lost, that really made me a fan. And that's partly because, as I have not been shy in expressing, I am a total, as the kids say, Akhmadaliev stan. You know, and when we previewed that fight, we knew it was going to be a test, right, for Akhmadaliev. We knew it would answer a lot of questions. But I don't think I was necessarily expecting Roman, you know, I thought he'd bring the experience. I thought he'd challenge Akhmadaliev. I'm not sure I expected him to go basically even up with him, which is pretty much what he did.
Right.
And I've been thinking about it a little, and I wonder if maybe one reason he's gone a smidgen underappreciated is that he's not necessarily, he doesn't have that one thing that leaps out at you that he does better than anyone else, right? He doesn't have the superb ring generalship. He doesn't have the fastest hands. He doesn't have the hardest punch. He's just extremely good at all of those things. He doesn't knock out people early. In fact, his last 9 fights have all gone 8 rounds or longer. What he does is he grinds people down. He just doesn't go away. He never takes a step back. He just keeps at it. He matches opponents punch for punch for punch. He must be just an absolute nightmare to fight. Which, you know, gets us back to your question. You know, if he gets past Payano, who could or should he fight? I think a rematch with Akhmadaliev.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Who holds, you know, 2 of the alphabet belts is definitely an option. Ray Vargas is another one in that division, but his fighting style doesn't really, you know, sort of lend itself to excitement and this kind of matchup, I think.
Right.
Angelo Leo, or rather the winner of Leo Stephen Fulton, would be tremendous fun with a Daniel Roman. And of course, there are a couple possibilities on this card. Brandon Figueroa, who we talked about yesterday, would be interesting. Although if I'm Figueroa, even if I win handily on Saturday, I probably avoid Daniel Roman like the plague, at least for now. And there's another possibility, another non-title holder at 122 who's just moved up to 122, who fights right before Roman, who might be an interesting matchup. But he's an interesting figure who comes with some baggage. And I'm talking about Luis Neri, who takes on Aaron Alameda in the opener of part 2 of the broadcast. Neri is the favorite and the A-side, but it's a bit of a challenge to warm up to him. He's missed weight a couple of times, as we talked about before. There have been rumors floating around about PEDs, as Breadman mentioned a couple of weeks ago. And as we've also talked about before, he's in fact actually banned from fighting in Japan. What do you make of Luis Neri? And now that he's moved up to 122 pounds, do you think his weight issues are going to be behind him?
First, I'll just say that I like this fight a lot. Alameda is talking a good game. He's unproven, but He seems to have confidence and the right attitude. He's a southpaw like Neri. He's in his prime at 27. Really good body puncher. He might make this interesting. That said, Neri is the A-side. He's the guy you asked me about. And he's a first-rate talent, and he's just hitting his prime at 25. He has an 11-fight knockout streak going, and against some good fighters, Payano, Mikjo Arroyo, Shinsuke Yamanaka twice, he's a badass. But as you said, he's missed weight repeatedly, and you just mentioned what Breadman was hinting at, the somewhat nebulous PED issue. We don't have any clarity on that, but there's at least some smoke there, if not fire. Without really knowing anything about his personality, something about this guy reminds me of someone we spent a lot of time with earlier this year, in a sense, Carlos Manzo, right?
Mm.
He's a talent. He's a badass fighter. Now, maybe Neri is the nicest guy in the world, but he looks like someone you wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley, and he might just have some demons. Certainly, he has some discipline issues. But I'll say this. I love watching him fight. Of the 8 undercard fighters on Saturday, Neri is the guy people are most likely to come away buzzing about, I would say. And by the way, he's trained by Eddie Reynoso now, one of the best trainers in the world. I would fully expect Neri to make weight this time, and hopefully we will see the best of him on Saturday.
Nice. Well, that's certainly what we think about this part of the pay-per-view card. And now to help us take a look at the second main event of this pay-per-view card. For the third time this week, we are thrilled to be joined by our colleague and our friend, Showtime boxing analyst, former Olympian, and junior middleweight titleist, Raul Marquez. Raul, welcome back. Thanks for joining us yet again.
Thank you, guys. Great to be back on.
Yeah, we're so glad to have you on again. So let's fast forward a few days. It's Saturday night. We're at Mohegan Sun, and we are at the halftime point of the pay-per-view. You've already commentated on one full-length 3-fight card, and you have a half-hour break before another full-length card starts. How do you imagine you'll be feeling? And given the preponderance of middle-aged males ringside, are you anticipating a mad commentary team dash for the bathrooms?
Well, it all depends on how long the fight goes. We might have some quick knockouts and fights that go fast, but hey, we got fights that go the distance, then we're going to have a problem with it. We're going to be rushing to the restroom. There'll be a line there.
Right.
I'll be fighting with Al Burns. Auto.
Right. I was gonna say you are a little younger than some of those guys, Al, Steve. Do you feel like you have the ability to hold it a little longer than some of those other guys, maybe?
Yeah, actually, yes, I do. I never had the problem that, you know, when I'm covering a fight I have to go to the restroom. So far that's never happened, and maybe it'll happen one day. Maybe this might be the one. You're gonna jinx me that this next Saturday might be the one. And we'll be talking about it if it happens.
Okay.
If there is a rush, my money's on you in a foot race.
Yes.
So I think you're
for sure. I'm the only one that's in shape, guys. Come on. You think Mauro's in shape? You think Mauro Ronaldo's in shape? And I'm thinking about Brian Custer.
Custer's in shape.
Yeah, he is.
Custer's in shape.
Yeah.
All right, look, Jermell and Jamal have fought together on the same card plenty of times. I think this is the 8th time that they'll have been on the same card. But when Jermell suffered his lone professional defeat to Tony Harrison in December 2018, Jamal was up next, and he kind of labored to a win in his fight. And he admitted to us on the podcast that he was really distracted by what had happened to his brother when he got into the ring. Is that a risk again here on Saturday night? And if you were advising them, would you rather they fought on separate cards just to avoid that risk?
No, because, I mean, they separate when they're in camp. I don't know if you heard them talk, but I talked to, you know, I'm really close to Derek James, and I'm close to Ronnie Shields. You know, Derek James, by the way, me and Derek James, we won the 1987. I don't know if I told you the story. We won the 1987 National Junior Olympics together. So
wow.
That's how we go way, way back. Okay. And of course, Ronnie, you know, he trained me a couple of fights when I was in my career. So, no, I thought they each do their own thing, you know, and like I said, promotion-wise, they both need each other. They're promoted as the twin brothers. I feel that they need each other, and they need to be always, especially now, you know, that they're fighting high-caliber fights. you know, bigger names, or you know, they're ready to maybe step it up, become like not just regular champions, but maybe superstars. You know, bigger super. You know, because of Twins, and you know, they're on pay per view. They need to be together. They need to fight. They need to be fighting in the same card.
So we talked yesterday about the challenge that Jermall is facing in Derevyanchenko, but really both brothers are in tough. Jermall is in a really challenging fight here with Rosario, who recently upset J-Rock Williams. Of the two Charlos, I'll put you on the spot here, Raul, which one is at the most risk? Which of the twin brothers has the higher chance of getting upset in your view?
In my view, I think Jermall, who's fighting Derevyanchenko, I think he's at higher risk of losing, because Derevyanchenko, you know, we know the experience that he has, you know, the amateur background, and those fights with Triple G and Danny Jacobs, you know, could have gone either way, in my opinion. And he gained a lot of experience from those fights. You know, they're more big fights, the atmosphere and all that. And I feel like Jermall has not been in that kind of environment, and I don't think Jermall has fought anybody like Derevyanchenko. So yeah, I feel that he's at, I'm not saying he's gonna lose, you know, but right, he's the bigger risk of both brothers, in my opinion.
Okay.
But so focusing on Rosario and the threat that he brings against Jermall, what would you say stands out about him? I mean, he upset J-Rock. He didn't see that coming. Is this a guy who's a dangerous puncher that Jermall needs to be prepared for a specific mode of attack that Rosario could bring at him?
Absolutely. But, you know, first let me tell you, man, I love this weight division, 154. Yeah. I mean, I used to fight at 154, but this weight division is stacked. I mean, you got the best fighters fighting the best fighters, and it's a division with a lot of talent. You know, at one point, I thought Jared Hurd was probably the guy to beat at 154, and then he gets beat by J-Rock, and then you got Rosario that knocks out J-Rock. So it's like, man, they play musical chairs here. And now Jermall is fighting Jason Rosario. Jason Rosario, he's a strong puncher. You know, he's aggressive. He's got a good chin. He's got a good body attack. I think, you know, what comes with him that Jermall needs to be aware of is his power. Technical-wise, you know, just ability-wise, everything, speed, I think Jermall has him on that. You know, he just has to be smart and not get caught by any of the bombs that Jason Rosario, you know, because he's a knockout guy, and he's in shape. He's got a lot of heart, and he's hungry. That's what I see in that fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If Jermall does win, I mean, like you said, this division's really close. Everybody can beat everybody else, it seems. But if he does win, he pretty much, he's the clear top dog in the division, right?
Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, he'll have Erickson Lubin, who we saw beat Gachet, you know, that's it. That'll be his mandatory. But yeah, absolutely. I think if he goes out there and takes care of business with Rosario, he will definitely be the lead. He'll be the top dog in that weight division for sure, in my opinion.
All right. Hey, look, Raul, thank you for joining us all week. It's been really good of you to come on and give us your insight. It's been much appreciated. Best of luck with traveling back over to the Mohegan Sun and being back in isolation there, and all the best for a long and hopefully interesting Saturday evening.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, that will do it for the second pay-per-view preview episode of Showtime Boxing with Raskin and Mulvaney. If you haven't yet seen it, or even if you have, check out The Journey, a chronicle of the Charlo brothers' personal and professional lives, narrated by our friend Brian Custer, available on all Showtime digital and on-demand platforms. This Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, the official weigh-in will stream live on the Showtime Sports YouTube page. And later that day, we will be back on the podcast with a weigh-in review and our final thoughts and our official predictions on all six fights. That all builds up to Saturday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Showtime pay-per-view, with a total of six fights, all for one pay-per-view price of $74.95. We will indeed be back then on Friday, but until then, thanks. so much for listening. Be safe, be kind, and be well.